The zombie unicorn story from The Economist is a phrase that deserves unpacking for listeners who haven't encountered it. In venture capital terminology, a unicorn is a private company valued at over $1 billion. A zombie unicorn is a company that achieved that valuation during the 2021 to 2022 funding boom, has not managed to grow into it, cannot raise another round at a comparable valuation, and cannot achieve a liquidity event, an IPO or acquisition, without admitting that the paper valuation was fictional. They're not dead because they're still operating. They're not alive in any meaningful growth sense.
The Economist's count as of this piece suggests there are dozens of these companies still on Silicon Valley's books. The venture funds that hold them are marking them at inflated valuations because they haven't had to write them down yet. But everyone involved privately knows the numbers don't reflect reality. The 113-point, 63-comment HN thread is a mix of people who've experienced this from inside portfolio companies and people who are skeptical that the problem is as severe as the article suggests.
The resolution mechanisms are constrained. A down round, raising new capital at a valuation lower than the previous round, is humiliating but survivable. A distressed acquisition means returns far below what early investors hoped for. A shutdown returns whatever cash is left. The one outcome that would vindicate the original valuation, a genuine IPO or strategic acquisition at or above unicorn prices, is available only to a small number of companies in this cohort. Interest rates staying elevated for longer than expected, combined with the AI investment surge, absorbing capital that might have flowed to later stage companies, has kept the exit window narrow.
Qualcomm acquiring Modular, the AI startup co-founded by Chris Lattner, the creator of Swift and LLVM, is a different kind of business story. With 204 points and 76 comments, this is being read partly as a talent acquisition and partly as a strategic move in the AI hardware-software stack. Modular's flagship product was the Mojo programming language, designed to bridge the gap between Python's usability and C's performance for AI workloads. Qualcomm has its own AI chip efforts, the NPU business in its Snapdragon lineup, and folding Modular's compiler and runtime expertise into that effort makes strategic sense.
The HN community is processing this with some sadness, because Modular positioned itself as an independent player trying to improve the AI infrastructure stack for everyone. Once inside Qualcomm, the direction of Mojo's development will be shaped by what's useful for Qualcomm's hardware roadmap rather than the broader ecosystem. That might produce good tools optimized for edge inference, or it might produce good tools that are primarily useful if you're running on Snapdragon silicon.
The Wikipedia Workers Union story from Britain being described as a global first in union recognition for a digital media nonprofit has 97 points and 105 comments, which is a high comment-to-score ratio that usually indicates genuine debate. The workers seeking recognition are at the Wikimedia Foundation's UK operation. The debate in the thread is partly about labor rights for workers at mission-driven nonprofits, and partly about what this means for the broader landscape of tech worker organizing.
The medical students and misleading studies story from Science magazine is more alarming in its implications. With 61 points and 34 comments, it's not lighting up the front page, but the substance is serious. Medical students are apparently using a popular research tool. The reporting doesn't name it specifically, but the implication is an AI-assisted research platform to generate, and in some cases publish, studies that have methodological problems severe enough to qualify as misleading. The pipeline from "use this tool to write your paper faster" to "the published literature now contains systematically flawed studies" is a short one, and the consequences for evidence-based medicine are real.
The PR spam story from Greptile, their piece comparing today's AI-generated pull request spam to email spam in the early 2000s, is 230 points with 135 comments. Greptile maintains an open-source repository and has started seeing pull requests that are clearly AI-generated without meaningful human review, minor text changes, superficial refactoring, documentation tweaks that don't improve anything. The analogy to email spam is apt. Email spam emerged because the cost of sending email dropped to near zero. AI PR spam is emerging because the cost of generating a plausible-looking code change dropped to near zero. The solutions are probably similar too: filtering systems, reputation scores, maybe human review requirements for new contributors.
The Xtank X4 e-ink reader, 262 points, 150 comments, is the most human-scale story of the day. This is a dedicated e-ink reading device that's being reviewed genuinely positively, not just as a gadget, but as a considered choice about how people want to read. The comments are a long conversation about e-ink versus tablet, about the cognitive experience of reading on a screen that doesn't emit light, about battery life measured in weeks rather than hours. In a day full of AI capability announcements and enterprise infrastructure, there's something grounding about 150 people having a genuine conversation about what makes reading feel good.
And the two pieces in the literature and writing space, Dostoevsky isn't difficult, and blogging can just be stating the obvious, connect in interesting ways. The Dostoevsky piece at 160 points and 188 comments is making an accessibility argument, that the reputation of Russian literature as impenetrable is more gatekeeping mythology than reality, and that Crime and Punishment, or The Brothers Karamazov, are actually more readable than their academic reputations suggest. The blogging piece at 254 points with 88 comments is making a generosity argument that the value of putting your thoughts in writing isn't that they're original, but that articulating what seems obvious to you might be clarifying for someone else.
Both of these are, in a way, pushing back against perfectionism and gatekeeping. You don't have to be a scholar to read Dostoevsky. You don't have to have a breakthrough insight to write a blog post. The words essay on Aeon arguing that literature fans should welcome AI as a fellow wordsmith is the more provocative companion piece, though with only 6 points, it hasn't resonated as strongly. The HN community finds the AI as creative partner framing less compelling than the simpler accessibility arguments in the other two pieces.
Now I want to spend some time on the what if we're wrong question before we close out this segment, because there's a claim that's been implicit in a lot of today's coverage that deserves stress testing.
Go ahead, I can tell which one you're going to pick.
The custom silicon thesis. The broad HN consensus around the OpenAI Broadcom chip announcement, and frankly around the broader AI chip landscape, is that custom silicon is the inevitable path for any serious AI company. Google's done it with TPUs, Amazon with Trainium and Inferentia, and now OpenAI. The assumption is that general-purpose GPU compute from NVIDIA is inherently inefficient for specialized AI workloads, and that companies with enough scale will always do better with purpose-built chips. That's a reasonable argument. But let me push on it.
Okay, where's the weakness?
NVIDIA doesn't stand still. The reason TPUs and similar chips can outperform NVIDIA's GPUs on specific AI workloads is that those workloads, matrix multiplication, attention mechanisms, certain convolutions, are well understood and you can build hardware specifically optimized for them. But AI architecture is not static. Every time the research community finds a better way to train or run a model, new attention mechanisms, quantization techniques, architectural innovations, custom chips that were optimized for the previous paradigm have to be redesigned. NVIDIA, because they're building general-purpose, high-performance compute, adapts through software and driver updates. A custom ASIC can't update its transistors.
So, the bet you're making with custom silicon is that the AI workloads you're building for today will remain the dominant workloads for long enough to amortize the chip development cost, which runs into the hundreds of millions of dollars and takes years.
Exactly. If there's a significant architectural shift, something like what transformers were relative to CNNs, companies with expensive custom silicon optimized for transformer workloads could find themselves behind companies that stayed flexible on general-purpose compute. The thing to watch for is whether any major architectural innovation in AI modeling requires substantial hardware redesign from the custom chip players. If you start seeing performance benchmarks where NVIDIA's latest generation outperforms Google's TPUs or OpenAI's custom chip on new workload types, that's a signal that the flexibility trade-off is real.
And the counter signal is that if custom chips maintain their advantage across multiple generations of model architecture, that would suggest NVIDIA's general-purpose approach really is structurally inefficient for these workloads. It's not a question that resolves quickly, but investors and engineering teams making decade-scale bets on custom silicon should have that contingency scenario in their planning.